Well, guys, no news, but it's news. We don't have operational control of our southern border. I mean, I think that if you've been listening to me all this time here at the Sarah Carter Show, talking about the border, border-related issues, if you listen to the Dark Wars podcast, which we are, I'm so excited about. We're going to continue the Dark Wars podcast. It's done so great. So thank all of you out there who've been listening to that. But we don't have operational control of our nearly 2,000-mile southern border with Mexico. And we certainly are losing operational control of our northern border as we're seeing people filter through there more than they ever have been. I mean, they're using Canada as an entry point. But I'm going to talk about the southern border and how Chief Raul Ortiz, I think he really stepped the game up when he told the committee members on the border at the border hearing led by Chairman Mark Green, the congressman. And he said, you know, this isn't a national security crisis or a humanitarian crisis. It truly is a policy crisis. And this is someone who actually works for the Biden administration and is putting the blame solely at the feet of the president of the United States and the executive branch. When you say it's a policy crisis, it's because the policy being implemented by the Biden administration is absolutely what is driving this mess and this chaos at the border. And it has to be intentional. And that is why I drove 4.5 hours because I was like, wait a minute, should I go to this border hearing? Shouldn't I go to this border hearing? I was literally laying in bed the night before the border hearing and telling my husband around maybe 10:30 at night or 11 p.m. I don't know. Should I go? Shouldn't I go? I didn't plan it out yet. I'm going to have to drive 4.5 hours. If I leave, I'm going to have to leave like by 5 in the morning. I have to be up at 4. And finally, I just said, okay, you know what? I'm going to set my alarm. And then I'm just going to, if I wake up, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get down there because it's just that important. It's just that important. I think we need to be paying attention to what's going on. And guess what? As soon as I shut my little eyes, the alarm was going off. It was a 4 a.m. And I was like, no, I don't want to go to the border hearing. It's going to be a 4.5 hour drive from my home all the way to far Texas. And instead, I just rolled out of bed, got my clothes on, of course, didn't want to go there in my PJs, and got everything in the car and just started to make my way to the U.S.-Mexico border. And I love FAR. FAR is a great community in Texas right near McAllen. And I went there. I got there. I made it on time. I couldn't believe it. Well, I was 15 minutes late, but nothing had really gotten started. So I was able to, you know, come right in at the beginning when Chief Raul Ortiz was getting ready to talk. And I had a chance to see a lot of the congressional members, Congressman Jimenez, as well as Marjorie Taylor Greene and others who were there at the hearing. I'm going to go into that in detail. I also have Dan Crenshaw on the show. Congressman Crenshaw is somebody who I admire very much. He has served our nation valiantly, both in his service in the Navy as well as his service in Congress. And you are not going to want to miss what he has to say. Whether you agree with him or not, you need to hear him out. It is just that important. But before I get there, I want to talk to you about Allegiance Gold. Allegiance Gold is a sponsor of the Sarah Carter Show. And in this day and age, folks, are you not watching what is happening in the world? I couldn't even believe it when I got up this morning and I was watching stocks plummet. I'm seeing banks that are filing for bankruptcy. Banks in bankruptcy, right? The failure of our banking system to protect investors. And I mean, I'm talking about the smaller banks, right? And what are we going to do? How are we going to be able to protect our finances? I think about it all the time. We don't know what direction this world is going to go in. We are like teetering on the edge of war. We see what's happening in Mexico. We have a Biden administration that is literally, in my opinion, failing us on multiple levels. But right now with Allegiance Gold, gold and silver will allow you to protect what you've worked so hard for. And you're going to be able to get back the control and the privacy that you need. Your money's not going to be sitting in some bank that's going to want to exclude you because you don't agree with their woke agenda either. And we saw that happen as well. So right now you can get $5,000 of free silver on a qualifying purchase when you tell Allegiance Gold that Sarah sent you. My friends at Allegiance Gold can help you protect your IRA, your 401k with physical gold and silver, or have it delivered securely right to your front door. I think that's pretty cool. And I love that. And I have some of those as well. So get $5,000 of free silver on a qualifying purchase when you tell them that Sarah sent you. So don't wait, call or click today, 877-702-7272. That's 877-702-SARAH, S-A-R-A. Go to protectwithsarah.com. We can't control the Biden administration, folks, but we can prepare. 877-702-7272. That's 877-702-SARAH, S-A-R-A, or protectwithsarah.com. I have been covering the border now, and I've said this for maybe more than 20 years, probably even longer than that. I choose not to always think about it, how long it's been. It's a very long time. But it's been a big part of my life. And why? Because I truly do believe that our border security, it parallels our own internal security. So if we don't have security at the border, if we can't protect our borders, how are we going to protect our people, our families, our communities? And I mean, just look at what is happening right now. Look at what's happening across our country. We have a scourge of fentanyl deaths, poisonings, folks, poisonings in our country. This isn't about junkies. It isn't about people shooting up on the streets, although that is just as important. This is about China utilizing our, and I've said this for so many years, China is utilizing our porous border to implement a proxy war on the United States by using the drug cartels as their useful idiots. And our own government right now, the Biden administration, instead of trying to protect our nation and our children and our people, last year, over 100,000 opioid deaths, fentanyl deaths, which is something completely new, something that we're dealing with that we have never dealt with before, because fentanyl is being delivered in counterfeit pills, meaning that you, and even in drugs, I mean, they're even, you know, putting fentanyl in cocaine or crystal meth or, I mean, whatever. Fentanyl is everywhere. Fentanyl is everywhere. It is an absolute poison, And it is killing our people. And I'm going to be asking Congressman Dan Crenshaw about that when he comes on the show. And I know he is a tier one fighter. He is a special operator, a Navy SEAL. And like my husband was in Delta. I mean, these are enemies of our state. And I'm sure it's so frustrating for him. Like, we have got to be able to take these people out. We have to be able to stop them. He has a plan to do that. It's a little different than what we've been talking about before. As you all know, I've been very open. I testified before the Ohio State Legislature to designate the drug cartels, especially Sinaloa and, Nuevo Generacion, Los Zetas, Gulf Cartel. I testified to designate them terrorist organizations. Crenshaw has a different way. He has a different bill. He gives a really valid argument, in my opinion, as to why we might not want to designate them terrorist organizations. I mean, I'm still on the fence, but I think it was a brilliant argument. And I brought him on to talk about that. I actually went to FAR, Texas, which is near McAllen, this past week. And I told you about my getting up in the morning early and having to drive down there. It is not fun, folks, driving 10 hours in one day back and forth after working all, you know, afternoon covering a hearing. But it was so worth it. I got down to the hearing and Chief Ortiz was testifying. He's the chief of the Border Patrol, Raul Ortiz. And I've talked to him before and I like the guy, right? I know it's difficult for him. But I also understand even more so the frustration of our Border Patrol agents and the feeling that they have their hands tied behind their back, which absolutely, 100%, their hands are tied behind their backs. They're not able to do the job that they've been asked to do, which is to protect the American people and to protect our border from an invasion, from cartels, from terrorists. They're doing everything they can. When you go down to the border, and when I'm down there, sometimes it's just stunning. You're standing there and all of a sudden there's 400 or 500 or 700 people just coming like in columns towards the border. You know, and even in the summertime, I remember in the heat in McAllen and Yuma, Arizona, just watching them pour across the border, children, women, men, a lot of times just men, you know, and you're sitting there watching this. And then here comes our border patrol. Now they can't patrol the border because they're so busy processing people in and they don't even know where to put them. And ICE won't keep them and hold them. I mean, if they pass a background check, which is not much, they could have committed crimes in their home nation. So as long as they didn't commit one here and they pass it, a lot of times, released. That was what the hearing was about the fact that we have no operational control of the border, and that comes straight from the horse's mouth. That is Chief Raul Ortiz. So if you're a Democrat out there, you're listening to me, and you're trying to say that I'm bullshitting or that this isn't, you know, that I'm anti-immigrant, I'm not. I'm the daughter of an immigrant, a Cuban immigrant to this country who came, you know, here from a nation that had been taken over by communism. And I understand the plight of the people that want to leave their countries and come here to America for a better life, but not that way. And I mean, tensions were high. People were upset. You know, they were, I remember hearing, Director McGraw from the Texas Department of Public Safety. He's giving his testimony too. And he was sitting there saying, look, guys, no, we have no control. Look, the federal government doesn't want to do its job. No, I'm sorry, but Governor Greg Abbott is actually doing the job of the federal government right now. We just don't have all the resources to do this, but we have to, because we got to protect our citizens here in Texas. And yes, the Texas governor is treating those cartels as terrorists. And that's why we're able to do this. I want you to take a listen. Here I'm talking to Congressman Carlos Jimenez of Florida, a Cuban compatriot, and I'm talking to him about the gotaways, about how important it is to focus on those that have come into our country, bypassed all of our security measures, and could be living next door to you. Listen to this. Tell me about how concerned you are about the fact that the border has been so wide open that so many people have flooded through. We know that, but we don't know who they are.
Well, the ones that we apprehend, we kind of know who they are, but the ones that got away, we have absolutely no idea who they are, where they're going, why they're here. And so it was good that the chief actually clarified that, hey, there's probably 10 to 20% more than the number that they tell us, which is well over a million. So well over a million gotaways, and we haven't the faintest idea who they are. They're in this country. We don't know. We're not capturing them because I asked Secretary Mayorkas, hey, have we captured any of them subsequent to them getting away? Very, very, very few of them have actually been apprehended, and not much is happening to them either.
Can you believe that? So we have all of these people in our nation. We have no concept of who they are. And look, I don't want to be the only one to say this to you. Let's get Chief Raul Ortiz. Here's a clip where he admits there is no operational control of the border. And this is to Congressman Mark Green, who's the chairman of this committee, and he was running this hearing, and I thought he did a brilliant job of it. Listen.
Chief Ortiz, does DHS have operational control of our entire border?
No, sir.
No, sir. I want you to think about how tough it was for Ortiz at that moment because he's a good man. He obviously told the truth. But this is the administration that put him there. This is how difficult it is. You have Mayorkas, who is a complete ass kisser. His job is to protect our homeland. The Department of Homeland Security that he is the secretary of, folks, was created after September 11th. in an effort to protect our nation from those that would want to target us. So now we've got more than a million known gotaways all over the country, living next door to you. They got to be living next to somebody. You don't know who they are. And in fact, your government doesn't know who they are. The Department of Homeland Security that your tax dollars go to doesn't know who they are. Your local law enforcement probably has no idea who they are. They could be anybody. They could be planning a bombing. They could be bringing in a biological weapon, a chemical weapon. They could be selling drugs at your children's school. Oh, they are. They could be selling fentanyl in counterfeit pills. Oh my gosh, wait a minute. They are. Over 70,000 fentanyl deaths, folks. Think about that. We had over 7,000 in Afghanistan die of our men and women, our soldiers. Over 7,000. Tens of thousands of wounded. And remember, we would count that as a ticker. Every time you turn on the news, tick, tick, tock, tock. Oh my goodness, another 500 dead, another 200, two men lost, two. I mean, it was all numbers. Is it all numbers still? Talk to the parents that have lost their children. I'm going to be bringing some of them on the show. Whose children took a Percocet and died, took an Adderall and died. Our children are being poisoned. And I want you to listen to Raul Ortiz here. He's talking to Representative here, Congressman Dan Bishop, great guy, fantastic at questioning. I want you to hear him say that it's the Biden administration's policy actions that have led to this. I want you to listen to this.
The cause is the change in policy. Is it not, sir? Will you be candid enough to be unequivocal and clear that that has driven the change?
I will tell you, sir, that when I was a deputy chief and the acting chief down here in 2014, you know, a lot of people described what was happening here in South Texas as a humanitarian crisis, a border crisis. And I was very candid and I said that I think we have a bit of a policy crisis. And I still hold true that we have some policies in place where we need to ensure that the men and women out there patrolling the border, investigating these criminal cartels, are actually allowed to do their job each and every day.
And their job is to detain or remove illegal immigrants.
Yes, sir.
A policy crisis. And he said 2014. And he said it's today, and that's significant. Because 2014, I was on the border. I was all over that border. That was the Obama administration. And it was DACA. It was the DREAM Act. And as soon as that DREAM Act went into place, children started flooding in. Family units. And I was down there, and I remember Congressman Henry Cuellar standing there, and he's a Democrat. And he still is screaming to the high heavens as a Democrat about what's going on at the border because he represents the border community. We had children in cages. Yes. Guess who put up the cages? It was President Obama. I was right there because he didn't know where to put them because it was a policy crisis. You can't put children into detention centers with adults. And they didn't know what to do. And they were trying to separate adults from children because they didn't want children getting attacked sexually or physically. They didn't want them. There were disease. I remember people were sick. There were all kinds of issues. It is the same crisis we are facing today. But today, it's so far worse. And as I was down there at the hearing, and as I was watching the congressional members, and I spoke with many of them afterwards, I realized we are in a real predicament. Our families are facing a very, very uncertain future. And if we don't pay attention to what is happening, we are only going to have ourselves to blame. And by the way, this goes out to all the lawmakers out there. And I know Congressman Crenshaw is going to get this one. He'll understand this. Who is going to pick up the pieces when something does go sideways? Who's going to be mea culpa? Who's going to say it's my fault? Who's going to say I should have done more when a bomb goes off in a soft target? Because it will. Because Our enemies tell us exactly what they want to do to us. And for some reason, I don't know if it's our American culture or what, we keep questioning it. We keep saying to ourselves like, oh no, that can't be true. Oh, the Chinese really don't want to take over the whole world. Oh, no way. There's no more Al-Qaeda. I haven't heard from them in a while. They're not going to bomb us. No, they absolutely will. We have enemies that want to see the end of Western civilization as we know it. We have enemies that despise the United States and what we stand for, which is liberty and freedom. We have enemies that run contrary to us completely. And like the Russians and Vladimir Putin, like President Xi Jinping, like the North Korean leader, we have enemies that are willing to take that the extra mile if we're not smart enough to outwit them, outplay them, and stop them. And that's what I want to do. I want us to start paying attention. Your families deserve it. And the American public, I mean, our future is really at stake here. Folks, I'm going to be right back with Congressman Crenshaw. But first, I want to tell you about Donors Trust. I love Donors Trust. Why? Because they allow you to donate money in a principled, tax-friendly way, and it helps you simplify your charitable giving. It's awesome. It is a great organization. It is a place where you can put your money and you know that it's going to go to projects that you believe in, to nonprofits that you believe in. For example, whether it's saving unborn babies, empowering entrepreneurs to offer alternatives to failing public schools, or fighting those green energy extremists that want to consolidate power, Donors Trust is the charitable giving account provider for you. Let my friends at Donors Trust help minimize your tax liability. Wouldn't that be nice? While maximizing your giving. Visit www.donorstrust.org/Sarah. That's www.donorstrust.org/Sarah. Again, that's www.donorstrust.org/Sarah. Well, if there's anybody that knows about making sacrifices, it's certainly Congressman Dan Crenshaw. He, like so many of the great men that have served alongside with my husband, are willing to give everything for their nation. And he's watching the border. Not only is he giving everything, but I keep saying, I love the fact that we have more and more military, retired military personnel and special ops guys and, going to serve in Congress. I mean, I think that's vitally important. Why? Well, because they understand sacrifice. They get it. They're willing to put everything on the line and they truly believe in fighting for their country. And there's more ways than one to fight for your nation. And we see that, we see that in the battle scars, the physical battle scars, as well as the internal ones that a lot of our troops live with every day. And Congressman Dan Crenshaw has been such an advocate for veterans. He has really stood up to, people that have even disagreed with him in his own party, in the GOP, on how to deal with Vladimir Putin and the war that he is waging on Ukraine. I believe it's important that we listen to one another. We can't just shut doors and not take a moment to listen to people that really know what it was like to be in war, to really put their lives on the line and sacrifice everything. Or almost everything in their battle against an enemy. If anyone knows that, it's Congressman Dan Crenshaw. He put everything on the line for his nation. The least we can do is listen, hear him out, and listen to what he has to say. And that's where I started with him on this interview. I'm here with Congressman Dan Crenshaw. You're a retired Navy SEAL. You represent Texas's 2nd District. I love the great state of Texas. That's why I moved here. Congressman, you're a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And this is your first time on the Sarah Carter Show. I'm so happy to have you on because I truly respect your opinion on so many issues and so many topics. And I believe that you're a real fighter for the American people. And although, you know, I know we have a house divided in the Republican on the Republican side, I think it's important that all of these issues come forward, and that being, you know, everything from Mexico to Russia and Ukraine. So I'm glad you're on the show.
Yeah. Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for having me, and appreciate your family service. I know your husband served, and we're very like-minded in that sense. So appreciate you. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Oh yeah. Anytime. And it's true. And you and my husband both suffered similar injuries, and you know, and so I feel for all of the military families out there and all of our wounded veterans and, you know, everything we've been through in this nation fighting for freedom. And now we're looking at so many changes in the world. And Congressman, we were just talking before we got on live here on the air, but we were talking about what is going on in Russia and Ukraine. And I'm going to start with that before we move to Mexico, because Mexico is a hot topic and I want to get right into it. But you do have a different perspective than a lot of Republicans on this issue and on Vladimir Putin. Talk a little bit about that. What's it like? First of all, what's it like on Capitol Hill when you guys are debating this and you're walking by your colleagues and you're totally opposed each one to how to handle this, how to handle this crisis with Vladimir Putin?
Yeah. Well, I would place myself in the more normal, traditional Republican place on this. I mean, there's some outliers, but it's still a minority. Right. That's for sure. And it's certainly, and if you look broadly at the American people, it's very much a minority. I am deeply worried that partisanship has taken over foreign policy opinions. And so it becomes this, well, because Biden's in charge right now, we're just against it. That seems to me to be more of what this is when I look at like kind of the Twitter right, kind of the influencer community that just the arguments are not even about, you know, whether we're wasting money or not. They're just about how much they hate Zelensky, which kind of just blows my mind. I mean, it honestly blows my mind, and it makes me a little taken aback. You know, I thought we were the party that actually wanted to stand up to strategic adversaries that have been trying to undermine our country for God knows how many decades, which is exactly what the Russians have done, whether they were the Soviet Union or whether they're Russia now under Vladimir Putin. I'm blown away by the naive notion that, oh, Putin's not an enemy, right? It's just a territorial dispute. The fact that that's even said is just blows my mind. I mean, it really does. It's not a territorial dispute. It's a war of conquest in Europe, the biggest war since World War II. It's not a territorial dispute. And it's not America first to say, look, Russia can do whatever they want to our allies and we will do nothing in response. It's not America first to let China and Russia just conquer the world until they come to our shores, right? It gets to this very naive sense of isolationism that, like, it made a lot of sense in the 1700s when it took 6 to 8 months to get to Europe, and now it takes 9 hours. The world is different. And until we kind of face that reality, national defense is not just like Navy SEALs sitting on our coastlines with our guns pointed out, just waiting for the invasion to come. That's not national defense. National defense means forward deployed. It means having alliances. It means admitting that you live in a dangerous and very, very small world where having more friends is beneficial, and being able to counter your enemies strategically and stand up to them is also beneficial for your interests. That, like, this is not about some fanciful notions of democracy and freedom and supporting people's human rights. I mean, all that is important, but that's actually not what this particular situation is about. It's a very much a cold, steely-eyed look at our own interests and what it means for America to be America. And I don't know when we just became, you know, pushovers for a bully with an imperialistic kind of ambition. I mean, it's,
well, and that's really what he is. I mean, everyone I've spoken to that has studied Vladimir Putin, that have worked in the intelligence apparatus, that I know people that remember building dossiers on him for our intel community way back when he was part of the KGB. I mean, he was a thug when he was young. He worked his way up by being a thug and being an absolute believer in the Soviet system. And I think for him, he wants to rehash and rebuild the empire, so to speak. You right. know, he sees himself getting older. He also sees Russia, you know, becoming, I think now he feels that sense of power that he's holding the whole world kind of hostage as he pushes forward in Ukraine. But where does this go? There, you know, and we talked about this a little bit. There's a lot of concern. I think the American people, it was like 20 years of war in Afghanistan, something you're very familiar with. you know, Iraq, long wars, long drawn out wars. And how do you reassure the American people that doing this and moving forward in this direction with Ukraine, which, look, I believe it. I believe we need to stop Vladimir Putin. I believe China is a direct threat to the United States. I believe their allegiance right now, their close-knit relationship is changing the geopolitical face of our planet.
Yeah.
So how do you reassure the American people, like, hey, this is the right thing to do. This is how we need to do it. And by doing this, we're going to once again be that beacon of light for the rest of the world. We're not going to allow these monsters to trample our allies and to take NATO and break it in half.
One way to help people understand it might be to examine the counterfactual. This would be important for Afghanistan as well, because people are, why were we there for 20 years? And I'm like, look, because the counterfactual was we did nothing and let the Taliban continue to give Al-Qaeda total operational space to do another 9/11. What did we get out of it? No more 9/11s. There's your answer. What am I? I'm your insurance policy. You send guys like me over there as your insurance policy to make sure that kind of crap doesn't happen. That's why leaving Afghanistan was a mistake. That's why leaving Syria would be a mistake, right? We are your insurance policy. National defense doesn't mean me just waiting here, but it means me overseas taking the fight to them. And to believe otherwise is to believe in a world that doesn't exist. And it's to be totally naive. So the counterfactual on Ukraine is actually really simple. And this is what I think the people who are against giving aid to Ukraine, they have to answer for that counterfactual. They have to, because by definition, they support this counterfactual. And it is this. So if you never wanted to give Ukrainian weapons, if you never wanted to be tied up with this country, you know, for whatever reason, then they never would have had our javelins. They never would have had our training. They never would have been built up the way they had been. They never would have been able to resist. And so the scenario would look a lot like this. The Russian army would not be decimated. It would be totally intact. It would have only taken a couple of days for them to just go right through Kyiv. And so now you have a completely intact Russian military with the entire support now of the Russian people because, well, they just won. The Russian people like winning. The reason Putin has trouble with his own population right now is because he's trying to make them go to a war they don't want to go to, and they're not winning. So in the counterfactual, you've got a completely intact military, a completely intact morale from the population. And guess what? Now they're on the borders of four other NATO countries, Poland, Slovakia, Hungary, Romania. And you also have a leader who has very clearly, as you articulated, has very clearly said that he has imperialistic ambitions. He's very clearly stated that he needs to release ethnic Russians from other countries like Latvia, Lithuania, also NATO countries. Moldova right now is currently dealing with a potential Russian coup inside of it, Russian political coup. So it's pretty damn obvious that it won't end there. And so which situation is more dangerous? The one where Ukrainians are fighting and dying and keeping them away from NATO's borders, or the one in which we have a completely intact Russian military emboldened, knowing NATO won't do anything to stop them, right on four more NATO countries' border? Which one do you think is more dangerous? And why wouldn't you just write a check, give it to the Ukrainians and tell them to fight it, just to prevent that scenario? And so like the investment we've made is a pretty damn good deal. And when it's all said and done, you can calculate it's less than 10% of our annual defense spending.
Correct.
And like, why wouldn't we want to invest that in completely decimating the Russian military? It blows my mind how this is not a good investment. This is very similar to the investment we made in the Afghan rebels in the 80s, right? Which led to extremely costly bogged down war with the Russians. And so, look, if you don't like being bogged down in war, like say Iraq for how many ever years we were there, I get that. I understand that sentiment. But that's also exactly why you want to bog down your adversaries in those kind of conflicts, because it's very costly and frustrating to them. And so the opposition to this to me seems like political contrarianism. And now let's address the fear of nuclear war and where's it going. And
that's exactly what I was going to ask you. And I was also going to say that I agree with you. I always believe that you should trust what your enemies tell you they want to do. If yeah. Al-Qaeda says to me they want to destroy Western civilization, I'm not going to debate in my mind whether or not that's true. I'm going to say, you know what? They really do want to destroy Western civilization. Thank you so much for telling me that, because yeah. now I know exactly how I need to handle you.
Yeah, right? Exactly. That's a great point.
Right.
It seems like an obvious point, but it does need to be made because the talking points are kind of ridiculous on this. It's like, well, well, NATO provoked Russia, or, you know, they're just acting. They didn't really do any of this, or he doesn't really. I remember all the people who were against helping Ukraine. They said he's not going to invade. It's just the warmongers from our own country trying to say he's going to invade. And then, well, OK, he's going to invade, but he's not going to go after Kyiv. Well, and then they've been wrong on every front. And they've been wrong about the nuclear issue, too. I do understand that fear, like right at the beginning of this conflict. But we're a year into it, and there's zero signs that that's a possibility.
So do you think he's more bluster with this, with the use of nuclear? He's got his submarines, you know, out there, his nuke submarines. They're threatening the use of these hypersonic missiles. As somebody who I absolutely respect, because I'll sit down and I'll talk to my husband, I'll talk to his friends. I've been in the war zone. I know what it's like to deal with the enemy. You know, I understand that. And we can't just back down because we think like, well, what if he's going to use a nuclear missile? Well, what are we supposed to do? Let him take over the whole planet? And then maybe.
Right, yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Won't use the nuclear missile. So, I mean, I get what you're saying. What about this? And I'm going to transition here because with Mexico, and I know you have a bill out now, and I'm so like taken into your argument about a lot of what is happening in Mexico, and you're like moving me in a direction. Like I was completely one way thinking about designating the Mexican drug cartels terrorist organizations, and now I'm rethinking that as I'm hearing your argument. I'm taking everything you say into consideration because I know how badly you want these guys gone. I know you're like my husband. You're like all the people in this country that have seen their children die being poisoned, you know, with fentanyl and these counterfeit poisonous pills all over our streets and all over our country, and the rise in crime and 30,000 missing people, unsolved murders in Mexico, probably way more than that. We have 20,000 missing children in Mexico that have been sold into sex trade and God only knows what else, what other horrors they're facing. And we've got cartels running that operation. But we also have China, and China and Russia together are taking advantage of it. I believe the Biden administration has completely failed on the border.
Yeah. And so in, interweaving
here.
Yeah. Let's like move across the globe. So let's move from Ukraine and Russia. Let's move over to China real quick. And we'll move down to Mexico. So China is inexorably linked to both of these problems. Okay, there are a long term strategic adversary. They're not as smart as sometimes we give them credit for it, but they're smart enough, and they're going to be a strategic adversary. They obviously support Russia very much in their efforts. They have strategic reasons for doing so. They want Russia to eventually win this because that foretells something positive for them winning, and say if they want to invade Taiwan. Okay, if the West defeats Russia here by doing nothing but arm Ukrainians, China's looking at that support. They're seeing how long it lasts, and they're seeing if it's impossible for them to invade Taiwan and take it over. And if people are like, well, the Ukraine war hasn't affected me. Okay, well, mostly because the Russians haven't taken over the territory yet. I mean, I could go into detail on how much actual resources are in Ukraine that are still getting out into the world economy, specifically neon, which is like 50% of the world's neon, which is used for semiconductors. And so then Taiwan has 90% of the world's advanced semiconductors. That's going to affect your life. Now, is it worth 50,000 American troops dying? No, I'm not so sure it is. And people can disagree on that. But it is worth at least preventing it. Right. It's worth the strategic deterrence. And people love to say peace through strength, peace through strength. Well, don't forget about the strength part, guys. The strength part's actually pretty important because it can't just be peace at any cost. And I hear too many on our side basically saying it's peace at any cost. Well, he's got nuclear weapons, so let him do whatever he wants. I mean, are you serious? I mean, you know, it's kind of like
President AMLO's abrazos, you know, without bullets, you know, hugs, not
exactly. Not bullets, it's peace at any cost.
Yeah.
And so China's now it's up for debate, and I could go either way on this. I don't know whether China does this purposefully or whether it's out of like this convenient opportunity that they let all of this fentanyl precursor materials come into Mexico, where they're pressed into pills and fentanyl and moved into our country. And so they're obviously interlinked there too. Again, could be deliberate. Could just be an opportunity for them that they see as beneficial to destabilizing our society. Either way, it's really bad, and we can blame them for it. either blame them for their action or blame them for their interaction. But then you have the drug cartels that are very much a clear and present danger to us, you know, and you know, again, this is all related because people say, well, why can't we focus on our southern border while we're focusing on Ukraine's border? And I'm like, well, I don't indulge in false choices. Okay. These are false choices. You can do both. People are absolutely right to say, why don't we do both? Let's do both. And so my bill does that. You mentioned I have a couple of bills that target the cartels. You know, my thoughts on this are you have to bring the entire weight of the U.S. military and State Department and FBI and DEA 100%. And CBP on the cartels. That's my basic plan. Okay.
And I absolutely believe that. And I absolutely believe by utilizing all of our resources and then holding Mexico accountable, saying we're not going to take this anymore from you. You are either going to be a part of it, or we are going to have to take matters into our own hands. It's not against you. It's against the cartels. Talk about that bill, because I think that's important. It'll authorize the use of force against the Mexican cartels, but won't necessarily have to designate them terrorist organizations, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the debate over whether you designate them terrorists is just it's honestly a very nitpicky legal debate. The reason I end up on against doing it is because it seems rather obvious to me that it will result in a really big immigration problem, which we don't need any more of those. And the reason being is because if you designate all of these cartels terrorists, well, they basically run the country, which makes everyone who lives in that country eligible for legal asylum or legal refugee status. And so you've just drastically increased our immigration problem. That's why I'm like, hey, I know it makes a good headline. I know they're terrorists. They're narco terrorists. Like, there's no doubt about it. They fit the description. They're not exactly like ISIS in the sense that they're not like these religious fanatics. Although some experts on the cartels might argue they, in a sense, they are. Like, they're sort of like worship of the dead, the sort of Satanism even that is pervasive throughout the cartel culture.
Yeah, their worship of Santísima Muerta, and then also of the use of but I believe it's just worship of power. And it goes beyond something that's even normal. I mean, they do the same kind of beheadings. They put people in vats of acid. They rape, they pillage, they mutilate bodies. They do it to children. They do it to adults. They do it to to somebody's wife. I've seen pictures of these horrific, horrendous acts. So they're monsters. I mean, even in a sense, like if it was religious, at least there would be some kind of a religious connotation with it. I never got that from ISIS. I always saw that more like with the Taliban. You know, they would give you a chance to live. At least they would pay. You could pay to get out or cut a deal, but you can't with these guys. You can't.
No, it's pure power. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, ISIS took a lot of terrorists in the Middle East have taken tactics used by the Mexican cartels, those public beheadings, because they realize that it creates the terror that they want. And so look, I mean, they're obviously terrorists. But again, it's a nitpicky legal debate on whether you should designate them as such, because I think the second order consequence of that is mass immigration all of a sudden from Mexico. So that's the only reason I say just hold the phone on that, because what does a terrorist designation actually do? It delivers some extra authorities. So my bill would just give you those authorities without designating them, which I think is just a win-win situation. So that's one bill. And then another bill is just a simple authorized use of military force. And I've got to address some of the counterarguments on that because, they've come from, some people in our media here and there, on the right and the left. And of course the Mexican president who's like, you're just going to invade Mexico. And I'm like,
well, that's what I was going to ask you. That response from the Mexican president, by the way, you speak perfect Spanish and it's beautiful listening to you be able to talk directly to the president of Mexico. I plan on going to Central America in the next month and I speak Spanish as well. And I think it makes a big difference when I'm having a conversation with somebody to know the direction. When you heard Obrador make those statements and say, you know, hey, like completely lie, completely wash his hands, say that we're making up this fentanyl problem and that, you know, he's going to get involved in our political, into our politics if we even try to do anything to Mexico. What went through your mind? What was your response back to him?
Yeah, he made it kind of easy for me because he used such silly straw man arguments and he came out swinging in favor of the cartels way too hard. I think that's a mistake for even for him politically.
He showed his cards.
Yeah, I think it was a bad idea. I mean, obviously, obviously his response made no sense for American politics. You know, even like nobody's on his side here, but you've got to look at it through the lens of Mexican politics, and it is more complicated. And in Latin America culture, I mean, I grew up and I didn't grow up in Mexico, but I, you know, I went to high school in Colombia. I lived in Ecuador for a while. I have a pretty decent understanding of the, especially of the criticisms and the fears that Latin Americans have about the U.S. Like it's a friendly relationship, but it's, but they're suspicious, right? Their history is, and I think a lot of this history is overblown. I don't think it's quite told correctly. It depends on what we're talking about, but there's certain, but it's not important because perception is reality. And the perception is that Latin America would be so much better off if America had never meddled in anything, never done anything, et cetera. Mexico in particular has, you know, a very clear memory of Mexican-American war and border disputes in Texas, et cetera. And so that suspicion has always been there. And that's what AMLO plays to. AMLO is the Mexican president for your listeners. You know that, but that's like calling somebody AOC. That's just his initials.
His moniker, I say.
So he plays to that. He's a left-wing populist president, a nationalist, as he calls himself, right?
He was a big union guy. And a lot of those unions were connected to the cartels up in the mountainous regions of Sinaloa. And, you know, there's a whole integrated, just for everybody out there who's listening, there's a lot of integration between the government of Mexico and the cartels, because decades of them growing and controlling, and I call them part of the fabric of Mexico. It's hard to rip one from the other, right?
It's really hard, and it's what makes this problem so difficult, which is why I think you got to take a hammer to it at some point, you know. And I'm okay with scalpels, multiple scalpels as well, but you've got to do something, and especially with the fentanyl issue has changed everything, I think. And so, but just going back to how he feels. So he's trying to play to that political wing of his own country that is very nationalistic, that says, keep the gringos out. The gringos can't tell us what to do. Even if what they're telling us makes a lot of sense, like, we're not going to listen to it. I'm not sure how I poll in the Mexican public right now. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'd be curious. I mean, we'll see. I get some feedback here and there, but I can imagine that, you know, the message I tried to send, which is why I did that video to kind of counter his claims and counter his straw man arguments, because the argument that, oh, we're just going to bomb Mexico, or we want to take over Mexico, and it's the typical interventionism of the United States. It's like, oh, come on, man, you know that's not true. What we're talking about is what we're talking about all the time with all of our kind of host nation partners. Like, we work with a specific country to battle their insurgency. Colombia would be the most obvious example. Like, there's never any threat to Colombian nationalism or Colombian sovereignty. The last thing we want is to take over Mexico and deal with all that. Okay. But what we do want is for Mexico to be prosperous and be safe. Because, and I tell people, I'm like, look, if I could choose one country in the world to put all of my effort into and just make 10 times better, it would be Mexico. That's the most obvious geopolitical benefit to the United States.
100%. It's our hemisphere, right? It's our hemisphere. Why aren't we focused more on the Western hemisphere? We should be the envy of Europe. We should be the envy of Asia and the Middle East. They should look towards our part of the world and say, wow, look at what you've done. Nearshoring, we should bring jobs back. We should be prosperous. I agree with you.
And it makes a lot of sense. And the first step to stabilizing and deeming prosperous any country, like if it's just country building 101, it's security. Security is the very first thing, right? Like you don't open a business on your street if you think it's going to get robbed. If you're sure it's not going to get robbed, okay, that's the first step. And now you consider it, right? Then you look at other factors. But the first step is making sure that it's not going to get robbed or say a corruption too. So maybe corruption is very interlinked in this case in Mexico. You make sure it's not going to get robbed either by the government or by a cartel. And so, you know, we have this situation where everything has sort of come together nicely. Not nicely, it's actually terribly. But it has come together in this perfect storm where you've got serious threats to Mexico, which is a threat to us. If Mexico fails in a failed state, that's bad for us generally. But you also have the fentanyl issue. And it's worth pointing that out because we've been living with this near failed state status in Mexico for, you know, a couple decades now. And we didn't really notice it too much. We should have, but we didn't.
Right.
What's changed things, and what I think I can get people to notice, is that the fentanyl issue has changed things, because it's not cocaine anymore. It's not, you know, there's not that many cocaine overdoses. There's not that many marijuana overdoses, but there's a lot of fentanyl overdoses. And they're putting fentanyl into these other street drugs and making them more deadly, more addictive at very little cost to the cartels. It's killing tens of thousands of Americans. That we can notice. That's destabilizing. And so, again, I'm just desperate to get Democrats.
It's just like cheap RTs, right? It's just like, you think it should be a bipartisan issue. It should be. And that brings up the border hearing. I was at the border. No Democrats showed up. I was just stunned. And here you have Chief Raul Ortiz, talking to the, to the committee. And, as soon as Congressman or Chairman Green asks him, about operational control of the border, Ortiz, who I actually was like, I've talked to him before and I actually like him, but he takes a step back and he has to walk away from the administration on this. And he tells the truth. He says, we have no operational control of the U.S.-Mexico border. What was your take when he said that?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard him say that before. He's just telling the truth. And I mean, it's more frustrating, more telling that Democrats just refuse to show up to that. And I would love to have been a fly on the wall for their backroom conversations on how are we going to play this, guys, because it's not a good issue for us.
Right.
And I think that's what it is. I think honestly, they're just like, you know what, let's just keep saying they politicize it and let's just not even be part of the conversation because there's no way for us to win. I assume that's how they calculated it, because they've backed themselves into a corner way, way too far on this. But you know, here's the thing. This is why I think my bills on the cartels can be their out. I tell them this behind closed doors. I tell Democrats who I can be friends with and like are more national security minded Democrats. I'm like, look, I'm giving you a way out here because my bill is about the cartels. That's a national security threat. It's about a terrorist element that's killing Americans. You know, you've got a Mexican president who's threatening to campaign against American politicians. Like, guys, I don't see a clear path here for bipartisanship. It just has to be it. And if this can't be bipartisan, my Lord, I don't know what will, because this is about the cartels. I mean, yes, the cartels are inexorably linked with the border, which is the only reason that they're not fully on board.
So in your bill, I know it is frustrating, and I know I don't have a lot of time with you, but I love this conversation because I'm trying to just, and you tell me if you need to run, I will let you go and I'm fine. I'll bring you back another day. But I'm trying to figure out, we can use our military. We can be the hammer. We can be the hammer with your bill, right? We can be the hammer. We can work with, I know we have a joint terrorism task force now. We have those set up, and that happened after, 9/11 commission. But we can actually still utilize our military to gain some operational control for ourselves of what is happening to our nation, because our nation is literally being poisoned. And I believe that our nearly 2,000 mile border with Mexico is being used by our adversaries. I think China sees the flaw in the failure in our government not to get control of our border. And I think even more importantly, we've got cartels with hundreds of billions of dollars and resources and weaponry, semi-submersible submarines, drones, 35,000 drone flights over the United States, spying on our law enforcement. I mean, this is incredible, incredible power that we need to regain control ASAP, in my opinion. So your bill would allow that to happen.
I mean, that's what the AUMF, what I had to respond, because somebody wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, kind of, again, strawmanning my argument, and the title of the op-ed was bombing Mexico to what end? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm not saying just go bomb Mexico. What we're saying is an AUMF is the bare minimum legal authority to give to our president to even conduct intelligence operations. But more importantly, to conduct side-by-side operations with the Mexican military. Now, again, the biggest impediment here is the Mexican government. I mean, AMLO's very extreme reaction is a pretty clear indication and very telling of the problem that we've actually been dealing with for years on this. They've never been Colombia. They've never wanted to be Colombia, which is a success story. They've always wanted to keep us at arm's length, whether because they're too afraid of the cartels, afraid of fighting them, or because whatever politician you're dealing with is literally bought off by them. Either way, it's bad news. And on AMLO's reaction made me think, oh my God, the situation is far worse than you even believe. Because I mean, a more measured reaction would have made sense. Like, hey, what are you guys talking about exactly? You know, right. Are you talking about invading our country? I'd be like, no, we're talking about working with you. And then he could be like, oh, okay, that sounds great. Why don't we do that? Like, that's what we want to do. But now that being said, you know, it does need to be said that if we're losing almost 80,000 people a year, maybe we will start reacting on our own. Maybe I do want you to actually believe that, because I need to actually save lives. And when we're talking about taking out fentanyl production facilities, we are talking about saving lives. It's rare in a drug war that you can make that direct connection, right? You know, because it is confusing and people are like, oh, well, what about demand? And I'm like, look, supply creates demand. That's all. If you don't believe that, I don't know what world you're living in. Supply absolutely creates demand, because you get people that you get one drug dealer into a high school, you get them addicted, they're addicted for life. It does create demand. It's a lie to say otherwise. And it's also kind of unbelievably unrealistic, but also uncompassionate and cruel to just kind of do victim blaming and say, well, when you guys figure out the demand side, then, you know, then you'll fix the problem. I'm like, that's a generational problem. That's a human nature problem. Okay. What I can do is say, look, there's actually two major cartels that produce the fentanyl. And if we targeted the facilities producing it, we could drastically reduce the supply. That's a concrete solution that I can at least wrap my head around and use.
Right, and we could consistently be a hammer. Like, don't even give them the opportunity. Seize their money laundering businesses. Shut down the Chinese capability to launder money from the United States for the cartels into China. Just shut it all down. There's ways of doing this. It's just we have to have the will to do it. And I believe that. And I'm going to leave this last question to you. I just want everybody to know, because I think this is an amazing bill, but you also put a bill forward that would make it easier for Border Patrol to hire law enforcement officials, military veterans. I believe that should be an absolute priority. I believe our veterans could benefit so much from this. And there are so many ways of making it easier and better for our veterans to continue doing the job that they were trained to do.
Yeah, I'll talk about that real quick. I mean, first, let me point out the broader problem. The broader problem is that Border Patrol agents have to take a polygraph before they get hired.
Right.
Now, coming from the military and the intelligence community, you know that not even your tier one operators have to take a polygraph to get their top secret security clearance. You don't. Only in the CIA, only in very high level intelligence positions do they was one of the first interview issues a polygraph. There's a reason for that. It's an extremely demanding, I would say, filter on applicants. The FBI does it too.
Nerve-wracking.
So, right. It's nerve-wracking. It's crazy. And I honestly think it's problematic. The polygraph is good for some things, and especially in intelligence operations, mostly as an interrogation tool, because you can kind of make people believe that you know something you don't. Now, but it's not a truth teller. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, it definitely doesn't make sense for Border Patrol. Okay. Now, the reason they even started using it was because there was a scandal with a couple customs agents taking bribes. But that's an issue with current employees. Maybe it makes sense to do a polygraph every 5 years or so after you've been a customs agent for a while.
Right.
It certainly doesn't make sense when you're just starting. And so my bill doesn't even go far enough. I was just trying to get some Democrats on board, and they still refused. You know, it was sad because that bill, it wasn't even my bill originally. It passed out of the House unanimously. So let me explain what it does. It basically just waives the polygraph requirement for hiring law enforcement and military. Okay.
And that was a big deal. That got brought up at the border hearing, by the way. That is a big deal. That is a reason why they're losing so many great men and women that could be actually serving in the border.
Well, you know what's infuriating? It doesn't have to be this crazy big deal. It passed unanimously, Democrats and Republicans voting for it, unanimously out of the committee before I got to Congress. And when Democrats took over Congress, because I came in as we lost the majority.
Right.
Democrats took over. They decided it was now a partisan issue. And under the Trump administration, right? So the result, the Trump administration was obviously very hawkish on the border. So they... Because of, again, partisan, I'll go back to this, right? It's that partisan contrarianism. And in some cases, the Republicans do it. In some cases, Democrats do it. This is a case where Democrats do it. They've backed themselves into such an extremist corner just because they want to be against us that they can't even agree with things they voted for 5 minutes ago. Because honestly, that bill doesn't go far enough. You should abolish the polygraph completely for Border Patrol. It doesn't make sense. You know, if you understand what a polygraph is used for, what it's useful for, it doesn't make sense. You don't make cops take a polygraph to be a cop. Why are you making Border Patrol agents take a board? It's ridiculous.
Unless you don't really want the border to be, I mean, the border is it's more of a theater, right?
And they don't want anything. I can't tell what they're for.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, let's, you know, tie their hands behind their backs, put them out on the border, and, you know, 5 million by the end of Biden's administration, more than 5 million people will have come into this nation. Well, I can't thank you enough for being on the show, Dan. Congressman, you are really a treasure, and your service to our country is, I mean, there's just no words for it. I always say, you know, my husband said something once, and I absolutely agree with him. You know, everybody was talking about World War II being the greatest generation. Of course, they were. My dad was part of that generation. But he said, you know what? That's just not the case. He said every time he was in Afghanistan or Iraq, young men, young women, putting everything on the line for their country and fighting for freedom. And we see that across the world right now. We do see that in Ukraine as well with their people, but putting everything on the line to fight for their nation. And you and he are a part of that. You guys are the greatest generation as well. And it's so nice to know that your service didn't end when you retired, you know, as a SEAL, but you took it upon yourself to go and serve your country in Congress. And that is just absolutely awesome and admirable. And you and your family, you know, I mean, I'm so proud of that. I think, like, you know, history will look back on all the men and women that have gone into service in our Congress in this particular time. And you will be shined on, you know, by history. Thank you so much. Before I let y'all go, I want to tell you about another great American, and that's Mike Lindell and MyPillow. And right now, I'm so excited because he has 85% off on all season slippers. You want to know why I'm excited about this? And if Mike, if you're listening, you know why I'm excited about this? Because my husband's guide dog, Danny, loves your slippers, which were my slippers, and decided to make them his slippers. So he ran off with one of the slippers. So I only have one My Slipper, and it does not work with just one My Slipper. You really need two slippers. But right now, with 85% off, I can get my slippers back. Danny can have the other ones. He can keep them. I know he loves them so much. I'm going to let Danny keep them. Plus, he's the guide dog, you know, you got to give him a break every once in a while. But you can only get that 85% off if you use the promo code Carter, that's C-A-R-T-E-R. You get that 85% off with the promo code Carter. And if any of you have dogs and any of them have stolen your slippers, right now is the time to do it. And why? I'm going to tell you why these slippers are so amazing. Because they have an exclusive 4-tier cushioning system. You're not going to get that anywhere. You also have impact gel in them, which is so comfortable and so soft. They absorb the impact while you're walking and they relieve pressure. They're available, listen to this, in moccasin or slip-on style. So you got two different choices, right? These won't last long, folks. So hurry to shop MyPillow.com during the all season slipper closeout sale. Get the all season slipper for only $25. Wow. With promo code Carter. That's while supplies last. Also, check out MyPillow's new products, including My Mattress Topper 2.0 and MyPillow 2.0. I love them. At MyPillow.com, promo code Carter. MyPillow.com, promo code Carter. That's MyPillow.com, promo code Carter. It was so great being with all of you. I hope you enjoyed that one-on-one, intimate and exclusive conversation with Congressman Crenshaw. He really explained, I believe, his position on a number of issues. And that's all we ask is you listen, take it to heart, and remember that this is how we come up with solutions. We just sometimes have to be quiet, we have to listen, and we have to compromise. And sometimes that's the way to do it. And guys, we don't have any other choice. We have a nation to save. So follow me on Truth at Sarah Carter Official, Twitter at Sarah Carter DC, and on Instagram at S Carter DC. God bless you. God bless our great nation, and God bless the great state of Texas.